Welcome to Live Living. My name is Catherine Kinley, a columnist for Live Living e-magazine, and it's my pleasure to share with our Live Living community a second visit with Brenda Stockdale. Ms. Stockdale is the Director of Mind-Body Medicine at Radiotherapy Clinics of Georgia Cancer Centers and a national pioneer in the practical application of psychoneuroimmunology. Her programs are endorsed by leading specialists in many different disciplines and have been implemented in hospitals, cancer centers, and primary care practices. Together with Bernie Siegel, she co-created a program of national retreats for exceptional cancer patients, known as ECAPs, for those with life-challenging illnesses. In addition to her private practice, Ms. Stockdale is a consultant for corporate and healthcare organizations and developed a health psychology program for primary care settings specializing in preventive medicine, autoimmunity, and stress-related conditions. Brenda has authored the highly praised book, You Can Beat the Odds, The Surprising Factors Behind Chronic Disease and Cancer. That is a 6-week program to help those dealing with serious and chronic maladies, along with their loved ones and support network, to regain control and hope over their disease. Brenda's undergraduate and graduate degrees are in behavioral science and health psychology, including completing a training program in mind-body medicine at Harvard Medical School. So, hello and welcome again, Brenda.
Oh, it's great to be here. I appreciate it.
We're so happy to have you join us again and revisit with us after our first interview in our last edition concerning breath. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you again.
Likewise, Catherine.
Brenda is also a registered expressive arts consultant and educator, and it is this role that I'd like to explore more today. Brenda, let's begin by discussing the way we think about creativity in general. When I think of creativity, I most often think of professional artists, musicians, dancers, those that do this as a profession. How do you respond when people say, oh, I'm just not very creative, I can't think of anything that hasn't already been done by 100 other people?
Well, we hear that frequently, and one of the reasons for that is what you just mentioned, is that we tend to associate creativity with these professional categories of the arts. And there's a couple of problems with that, and one is that creativity is intimately linked to our potential, whether it's potential for health or happiness or even basic problem-solving ability. So we really do want to create a broader definition in the way we think of creativity. But since you mentioned the arts and the professionalization of the arts, I think that was a turning point in our history, because even in the industrial age, folks might have been working at a factory, perhaps, but they might come home and do biological experiments. People had training sometimes in drawing or singing, and they didn't think of themselves necessarily as a professional singer. They might have even been part of the upper aristocracy or the nobility, as it were, but they had, lessons in drawing, painting, singing, etc. And so really the arts were part of how individuals expressed themselves who had the means or the time or the ability. And like I mentioned, even in the industrial age, people took some of that home with them, and there were all kinds of scientists and people doing experiments and studying insects and all sorts of interesting things happening in the industrial age. And these were by individuals who weren't professional, so to speak, biologists or artists or even songwriters. So we really want to go back to that time where we give ourselves a little bit of permission to play around a bit with some of these creative endeavors.
Very interesting. So it sounds like even in the past, people, though they may not have been doing anything creatively as a profession, they were doing it as their hobbies or their passions or as their entertainment.
That's right. And so we know now that there are two different types of thinking, so to speak. One is focused concentration, and then the other is creativity. And research shows that when we can find a balance between these two and learn some of the signposts of each of these typical ways of thinking or processing, we can actually exploit those in our own best interest. So, for example, if you're, you know, checking on your balance of your bank account, that may not be a great time to have your mind wander. But you may really want to use focus concentration. But if there's nagging problems, either in our personal or professional life, then that's a great time to use some of these creative measures that anyone can actually implement. And that's some of the most interesting research, in my opinion, came from folks who've studied creativity as a whole. One particular woman by the name of Marilisa Dunick, she authored a book called The Right Brain Experience that, unfortunately, it's out of print right now, but she interviewed cartoonists, writers, she interviewed professor of engineering at Stanford University, and even a counter-espionage agent, a spy. So she interviewed people who were at the peaks of their profession in various fields, and found that even if they were an engineer, perhaps, something we would think of as being that kind of focused, requiring that focused concentration, more of a left brain kind of activity, she found that no matter what field they were in, they engaged in these very creative leverage. They leveraged their creativity for problem solving in very specific ways that when folks like you and I adopt some of these methods, we too upgrade our own creativity.
That's so interesting. So it sounds like being able to express ourselves creatively or to have that outlet is important for everyone, not just, you know, the Rembrandts, Martha Grahams, or the John Lennons that are amongst us. Problem solving, when I think of problem solving, I think it's a very cognitive activity, very logical, rather than a creative activity. So exactly what does happen in the brain when we draw or paint or listen to music or write a creative story?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, to give ourselves permission to, first of all, do a bit of daydreaming. And a recent issue of a science magazine from Britain that I just love called New Scientist had an article on creativity. And it's showing really that allowing ourselves to do a bit of mind wandering is essential. And so we see this in a variety of, manifesting itself in a variety of ways. When you and I have a particular problem and we work it too much, we often tend to kind of loop in our thoughts and almost increase anxiety because of the way that process works. And anxiety is the direct, it's basically your oppositional factor to creativity. But mind wandering and a bit of daydreaming actually supports creativity. In fact, in studies, they find that people who allow their mind to wander outperform their peers in problem-solving activities. So there's a few examples of this that get kind of interesting. I have the pleasure of knowing a man. His name is Bruce Blackman, just an amazing individual, and he was a laborer who injured his hand and wasn't able to support his family, which became, of course, an issue. And so his wife went to work, and at home he was really frustrated, and there was nothing really to do, so he just kind of indulged in something he thought of as a hobby, and it happened to be music writing. And he wrote a song that became a top 40 hit, and now he's a songwriter for major motion pictures. So it's a wonderful story, but it doesn't even have to do with necessarily our work, but it has to do with how much permission we give ourselves to play, to let our minds wander, to give ourselves permission to not focus so much on a problem, almost take a break from it for a while, and let ourselves do something else. So I don't think I answered your question about cognitive activity and creative activity. When we mind wander, or when you doodle, or hum a tune, or daydream, it changes our brainwave rhythms have shifted from beta, which are these, it's involved, let's say, in balancing your checkbook, and then it shifts to alpha, which is a very creative brainwave rhythm that if you close your eyes and imagine being at the ocean or the beach, that's going to stimulate that brainwave rhythm. And that's associated with leaps of insight. And that's really what we want to stimulate.
Leaps of insight. Mm-hmm. What a fascinating phrase. That's just so incredible. You know, we know this. We always are taught we need to take a break. We need to go on vacation. We need to get away. You know, even the President of the United States gets away to Camp David every now and then. But we always think, oh, we're just too busy for this. I have to work on this problem. I have to stay focused. I have to, you know, have to have tunnel vision here. And this is kind of a whole different paradigm.
It is. And part of it is compounded by our educational system because we've had limited funding for the arts. And our society tends to reward individuals who have training or degrees in hard sciences or mathematics or engineering, accounting, these kinds of professions. The whole idea of starving artists is very much in our consciousness. But what we've lost along the way is the permission to play, to daydream, to draw, to paint, regardless of whether we are a professional artist or not. And so when we try too hard to problem solve without enough play or downtime, daydreaming time, we actually increase anxiety over the very problems we're trying to solve, which makes it less likely that we're going to have the necessary insight for a creative solution. So some of the things that we want individuals to be able to engage with is the ability to do this very deliberate break-taking from whatever our problems happen to be. When I was working on the book, I know I got kind of, I had some difficulty with this one section of the book, which was actually on creativity, and I couldn't think of a subheading for the balance between the type of writing that we want to engage in when we're healing the past and the present or doing some kind of creative work. And one day I decided to just give up thinking about it, and I was in the shower, and I noticed that the shampoo bottle actually said, it was really just sitting right in front of me, and it said Happy Medium. And that was the name of the shampoo. And I thought, oh, that's the name, that's the subheading, that's the perfect title for what I'm trying to say. So sometimes just letting something go, then we're more open, or subconscious can give us cues from our regular environment and come up with interesting solutions.
Very interesting. So besides for being able to come up, you know, taking a break, stepping away from the issue and playing a little bit or allowing your mind to wander a bit to come up with a solution to the problem, does this practice of doing this, of these activities that you're talking about, does that have anything to do with our physical health, our well-being?
Very much so. Recent studies have shown that the more we are demanding of ourselves, whether it's cognitively or even physically demanding of ourselves, there's an increased risk for the overproduction of some stress hormones. And most of these hormones, as we know, we need them, they can save our lives, but we also know that the overproduction of these hormones is counterproductive to emotional, mental, or physical health. And so when we try too hard, when we work too hard, we can often increase anxiety, which is, you know, that's the opposite, as we mentioned earlier, in creating a state where creative problem solving or brainstorming can actually take place. Whenever we have a health problem, that's the one time in our life where we really need creative problem solving ability. We need fresh solutions to real problems. And the more we worry and work a problem, the less likely we are to have that kind of deep intuitive awareness that we need to transcend that problem and to be able to look at it in a new way. So to enable that, there are some definite things folks can do. There's many exercises outlined in the book. They're called Get Started Now exercises. And when we do those over a period of time, they have a cumulative effect of increasing not only creative problem-solving ability, but that kind of deep intuitive awareness that we need to be able to design a life that suits us. And that's really the ultimate in creativity, is being able to do that. So some of these things can include a bit of the daydreaming, some of the exercises that are free on my website, the autogenics, some of the imagery visualization. And then I always recommend Betty Edwards' book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. And that's an excellent book to follow some of those exercises, and it will take you out of that hurry and worry state and allow us to pause and stop forward thinking, which sends out more of those stress hormones and allows the brain to heal and repair and even create some positive change, hopefully an immune function.
Excellent. Excellent. I was reading your book, and I came across on page 165, it's under week 4 in chapter 7, talking about writing for your life. And you said that abundant evidence demonstrates that expressive writing or journaling boosts thinking ability, increases working memory, reduces pain, tension, fatigue, enhances mood and sleep quality, and positively influences your immune system. And then best of all, it's free, just like breathing, as we discussed last time. It's free and requires no special skills, and you can shred whatever you write and still get all the benefits. So let's get practical. You talked about some of those exercises, Let's Get Started Now exercises, but could you share with us very briefly how those concepts can be applied? For instance, could you please share with us a creative approach that you have actually used with patients there at the cancer centers in Georgia?
Yes, and I love the quote you just, I don't have my book actually here to follow along, but I was like, this is so true. We have some really interesting new data, even since the book came out, about how very simple writing exercises can help with that. One of the things that is essential is knowing that as you're writing, you're free from prying eyes. We want to make sure we're not feeling censored. And that also opens up that connection between that left and right hemispheres. Even on Madison Avenue and advertising agencies, when they do brainstorming exercises, no one's allowed to criticize an idea during brainstorming sessions. That's for later, during the editing stage. And so we want to give ourselves that same kind of permission to write with abandon. So I often recommend that folks start their day with just a few pages, almost like a stream of consciousness. And it might just be, 1 to 3 pages of writing where you're almost writing faster than you can censor yourself. And as you mentioned, you can shred what you've written.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to feel like anybody's going to find this. But sometimes it can kind of unleash a little bit of that, what might be bothering you, or a way that we might be stymieing our own potential or creative expression.
Excellent. So really you're just talking about grabbing a pen and paper.
It can be that simple, of course. Crayons, markers, anything.
Hmm. How has this, knowing my clients and many of my friends, and knowing how prevalent depression and anxiety is in today's culture, has this activity or these activities or these concepts helped those with depression and anxiety?
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of interesting things now available for us to be able to draw on. In fact, one professor emeritus at Georgia State University has actually used distance writing methods for individuals who are overcoming depressive and anxiety disorders. So it can be these methods can be useful for those populations. And then, as well, we know that the same kind of interplay where you're allowing your mind to correct faulty beliefs, this is another great way, because when you're writing them down, we're able to confront a limiting worldview. And then we're able to really refine, kind of modulate that a bit, and almost choose a frame of reference that's more in our best interest. So writing is very useful for these areas with depression and anxiety, but we're also seeing structural changes in a part of the brain that regulates a lot of fear. That's called the amygdala.
Mm-hmm.
And neurofunctional neuroimaging is showing actual changes in the amygdala when we, not just with the creativity, but almost the whole approach of relaxation, healthy breathing, creative problem-solving ability, and then cognitive behavioral therapy where we're challenging these limiting perceptions and beliefs. So we're seeing actual physical changes in the brain. The other advantage is when we engage cumulatively in these activities, a little bit of relaxation, a little bit of writing, drawing, etc., and we do this on a regular basis, we find then that people, the area of the brain that actually is responsible for feel-good hormones and sensations actually gets a little bigger. We actually grow real estate in this area of the brain. And so people do have a greater sense of pleasure and enjoyment in their everyday life. And there's a lot less stress, hurry, and worry.
Hmm. That's fascinating. My mind is just reeling with ideas of how I can use this personally in my own life. When I'm not feeling well, or when I have a huge problem, or when I'm a little down, or you know, any of those issues. And also a lot of ways I can suggest to my clients when they're dealing with, say, for instance, rheumatoid arthritis or fibromyalgia and other chronic pain, and those obviously suffering with the